Welcome to the Voices of Freedom podcast, brought to you by Freedom A La Carte, where fearless conversations meet unwavering passion for justice. We're your hosts, Devin and Dory. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you've been with us since day one, get ready for another season packed with inspiring stories, thought-provoking discussions, and a dash of that freedom spirit. We're your guides through the realms of empowerment, advocacy, and the pursuit of a world where every voice is heard. Each week, we'll be chatting with changemakers, survivors, thrivers, and visionaries who are shaping a brighter, more equitable future. Whether it's personal stories of triumph, insights into pressing social issues, or tips on how to make a positive impact, we got it all. And don't forget, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about joining a movement. Get ready to be inspired and challenged. And most importantly, get ready to be a part of the change. So grab your favorite cup of coffee, tea, or whatever fuels your passion and join us as we dive into our next episode. Welcome back to season four of Voices of Freedom. We're launching 2024 off with a special guest. We have Yvonne from PACT. Can you give us a quick introduction about who you are and who PACT is?
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Yvonne Chen. I am the Director of Private Sector Engagement here at PACT. And so PACT stands for Protect All Children from Trafficking. And so we are a nonprofit organization specifically focusing on advocacy and prevention work. And so our goal is to make sure that every child is free from the purchases of sex and exploitation and commercial sexual exploitation. So really thinking about how child sex trafficking and child sexual exploitation is happening in this world and how we can really navigate those with our different programs. We have a few different programs such as education, youth education, community education. We do trainings for different industries, including the private sector and public sector. And then we also do a lot of policy and advocacy work. And we also have our Survivors Council, which is composed of around 16 people who all have experiences, lived experience, and they are really guiding a lot of the work that we do here. And then for me, my background is working in this anti-trafficking space and working with victims and survivors of trafficking for over a dozen years now.
Oh, wow. Let's jump into the topic of human trafficking red flags. Can you start us off with like a generalized mental checklist that anyone would be able to use?
Yeah, definitely. So I do think it is important to really think about how trafficking is about vulnerabilities. Yeah. So first and foremost, we're really looking at the ways that trafficking can happen. And when someone has a vulnerability, and that can be someone who is looking for a parent figure or caretaker figure, that can be someone looking for a romantic relationship, that can be someone who is needing physical food, a safe place to stay, things like that. So everyone has different vulnerabilities in a way that traffickers can target. So before going into some potential red flags or potential flags for people, I think it is important to kind of note that we are thinking holistically and with the context of what trafficking can look like. So when we're thinking about that, we can really think about if someone is, do you see someone who's in an unhealthy relationship or some sort of dynamic? Do you feel that this person may be fearful, anxious? Are there any signs of physical abuse? If another person answers all their questions for them, if you are in a relationship with this person or you know them as a friend or anything else, do you know if they have control of their documents? Do they have inconsistencies in some of the explanations for why they are withdrawn or why they are maybe really having some signs of abuse, things like that. So I do think it is important to really think about that. And trafficking is not one sign, it's multiple signs really, or looking at the, and looking at the context. So it's also important to realize that victims can be of all ages, genders, ethnicities. So we're really talking about an expansive way of looking at what trafficking can be and what it can look like in our communities.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about specific industries. If you work in a salon, like a hair salon, what are particular signs that you could look for in a client?
So some of the signs can overlap. I think one of the things important to really think about is salons are often spaces where people feel like they can chat freely, if there's a relationship with their hairdresser. So sometimes that can be also the space that potential victims can, it can be the only place that they are alone, away from their trafficker or under view of their trafficker. So I would say, you know, it's important to probably pay attention if you are in the hair salon to pay attention to the conversations, potentially that people are having, or if you're a hairdresser, really, having an open conversation with your client. So the client potentially, you know, can always be under surveillance by someone. So really hoping that they open up in that sense. There could also be bruising around the neck or the head. If the client, you know, is very reserved, maybe they aren't sure where they are. Maybe they're avoiding eye contact. If they're potentially can be similar to the overlapping views of what I said earlier, really thinking about how someone is reacting or acting around someone. And I think those are, you know, and it takes time to build trust. And yeah. So I would say, like, it's important to be able to create spaces where people feel like they can go chat with someone if they do need help or if anything ever comes up, and they do need some place to go back to or some place to talk to someone where they feel like they can get help if they need to, or if they want to, if they're able to.
Right. So another industry that I would love for you to highlight is the hospitality industry. We have a lot of big events here in Columbus, for example, like the Arnold, a lot of large football games, hockey games. And we have a lot of organizations like the Soap Project comes in during the Arnold. I'm sure you're familiar with the Soap Project. So if you could just highlight, like, what are specific signs that people could look for if they work in the hospitality industry or if they're staying at a hotel during this time?
Yeah, definitely. So we partner with the Soap Project for Super Bowl and some other events, and they're so great. Really, really thinking about if you are in the hospitality industry, specifically if you're in a hotel, maybe really thinking about doing training. So we do have an e-learning that's available for hospitality industry. We have a 30-minute, 60-minute, and 90-minute one. It's in a variety of different languages. And so, you know, I think really getting training is really key. If you're a manager, making sure that you are doing training for staff. So potential things that people could look out for is if a guest requests rooms that are more isolated, maybe close to an exit, maybe they are checking in with little to no luggage. Maybe they're, you know, don't have access to cell phones or documents. You know, some of these things are really require some time and other things you could potentially flag. So if you're, again, we had mentioned earlier, potential flag of if you see someone in like an unhealthy relationship or a dynamic that's going on, if someone is speaking on behalf of someone.
Right.
So those are some of the things to think about. You know, if there is a person who's watching the room or appears to be monitoring the room, if there's a lot of visitors visiting one room in a short amount of time. So there are some of these things, you know, if there's a lot of additional requests for housekeeping items, such as towels and linens, but they don't want staff to enter the room. I think there's a few of these specific signs that we can look for, but understanding that, again, context, totality, I would say it's important to be able to share what, even if you have an inkling of something that's going on or something feels off, communication is really key in this industry because someone at one time period and one shift can see one thing and someone on another shift, another time period can see something else. And so it's important to be able to bring those to like it forward so that maybe those two different instances can essentially identify a potential exploitative situation or someone who is in an unhealthy or exploitative or trafficking dynamic. So really thinking about some of these aspects. And there's also like a 24-hour hotline that people can call, but there's the National Human Trafficking Hotline. They can also text. So there's a few different avenues of reporting as well. But I would say for hospitality, important to do training and also have protocols in place. Should someone on staff see something and be able to, they know that they're, what they can do and what they can, next steps that they can take.
Yeah, that's great information. And I think it would be important right now to talk about how, there's a lot of like misconceptions that it's only men that are traffickers and that only females are being trafficked. I don't know if you, I'm sure you see this a lot in your, the community that you educate, but I see it a lot in our community that we educate that they think that, you know, only women are being trafficked and only men are the traffickers. In reality, when I hear stories from the survivors that we work with, a good chunk of them have had female traffickers. So I think that's just an important thing to highlight right now. Like when you're looking for red flags, don't just mark something off or like, I don't know what the correct way to say it is, but not think that something's important because it's a woman or it's a man that could be being trafficked.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many stories in media that show one specific way that people get trafficked. And it is really important that when we do our trainings, we are really emphasizing the multitude of ways that someone can be trafficked and the multitude of ways that people can be victims and can be traffickers. And so, you know, one of the things that people also are unaware of is familial trafficking. Yeah. So there's high number of instances where here domestically too, there's a lot of familial trafficking. So that means trafficking by family members. That can be through a grandma, that can be a grandpa, uncle, aunt. So, you know, their mom. So there's a lot of different ways that we should be thinking about trafficking and making sure that we are not, like you said, dismissing any sort of instance because we think trafficking only happens one way. One of the things that I also emphasize is sometimes like people know they're traffickers and it's not necessarily a stranger situation where they're like kidnapped. You know, I really think about people who are online and young people who are online who really are meeting potential strangers online. And that's how a lot of exploiters and traffickers end up grooming people online. And so, you know, again, yeah, really making sure we're thinking about trafficking expansively and the ways that people can get trafficked, but also who is being trafficked for sure. And who are the people who are traffickers?
Yeah, I recently attended a human trafficking conference at the end of last year, and they had I can't remember what the title is, but basically police officers come in and they were talking about how they're going into kindergarten classrooms because kids are getting phones younger and younger and having to do a version of a trafficking education like presentation to these kindergartners. And it was mortifying. One, having to tell these little kids like this could happen to you, but also like that this is happening, you know, like the reason that they're having to do this is because it's happening to kids this young. Another question I had for you, since you guys primarily like focus on children, do you see like a higher percentage of familial trafficking in children, or is, I don't know if that would like something.
Yeah. I mean, I think statistics in general in the anti-trafficking field are harder kind of solidify. So I couldn't say about a higher, you know, percentage. I would say like it definitely happens. And I think people don't think it happens as often as it does. I will say even in terms of how we talk to young people and really we go into schools. We also have something called the Social Identity Quest that's online. And that's available and free to everyone. And that's really thinking about healthy relationships. Like, what do healthy relationship dynamics mean? What does online safety look like?
Yeah, for that's great.
Digital natives? And what does it look like to think about potential ways to that trafficking can happen? And not as a way to scare people. It's really thinking about, hey, like, if we're going to use these resources, or if we're going to be online, if we're going to be in different communities, if we're, you know, looking at these different spaces, then how can there be more education and awareness, not telling people what not to do, especially young people, but really having conversations, because mm-hmm. they're having these conversations amongst themselves as well. So that's one thing that we really felt was real important. And we also do community workshops for people who have young people in their lives, really thinking about how to navigate some of these conversations that people aren't used to having, and being able to build that trust so that if anything were to happen, someone would be able to tell a trusted person that they have in their life.
That's a great resource to offer. One thing that you did mention that I would like if you could touch on is, why is it so hard to have reliable stats in the human trafficking area?
I think that there's a lot of people who are unidentified in trafficking. And so there's a lot of unidentified victims who are trafficked. And so I think in general, it's harder in that sense. You know, I think if we're looking at a specific niche, you know, if we're looking at hotline callers, you know, I think like that's very specific. But I think in general, there are so many unidentified victims of trafficking. And so I think it's hard to kind of gauge what an exact number is, even though I know people are very interested in hearing all of the very specific numerical stats around that. I will say we have a lot of organizations working on anti-trafficking here domestically and internationally, but people often, you know, another misnomer that people have is trafficking happens internationally and it's only when people are brought over that people are trafficked, but they'd be surprised to know that actually there's a lot of domestic trafficking, people who grew up here in their communities, being trafficked in their communities, doesn't need to cross state lines or city lines or jurisdictions. So I think it's really us talking more and more about the trafficking that can happen in its totality around us and making sure that we're, and I think more and more as we are able to provide a clearer picture and a fuller picture of what trafficking can look like, hopefully, you know, there will be more statistics in the future that could be more reliable.
Yeah. A thing that we have come across is that our survivors that we support in our community, a good chunk of them didn't even realize that they were being trafficked. Like, they didn't know that's what was going on until like someone had shared that information with them. Like, maybe they had gone into jail and then into our catch court system, which is like a specialized docket. And someone from catch court is like, hey, I think you're a victim of trafficking, and then told them, and then like, oh yeah, like, that's exactly what it was. So I think that's an issue too with stats, is like people just don't even realize that that's what is happening to them.
Hey guys, just wanted to pop in really quickly and invite you to join us for our first open mic night of 2024. We are so excited to partner with We Amplify Voices this year for our open mics. And we are going to be holding our first one on March 15th. At their location, which is 1327 Sullivan Avenue. Doors open at 5:30 and the event starts at 6 and will conclude around 7:30. Find more information at freedomalacart.org.
And then another thing that you touched on was, I think that there is still, which is crazy to me, a lot of people that really like believe what they see in movies, that people like are kidnapped and put into a van and like from India or China or something and then brought into the US. And in reality, like all of the people in our community that we serve are from Ohio, and the majority of them are from Columbus. So it's just, you know, like that's, this is like the important work that we do, is just sharing the truth behind human trafficking and that, you know, what the reality of the situation is. So I'm grateful for the work that you guys do, as well as educating for the youth and their families.
Yeah, definitely. It's so important, I think, just to be able to talk about these things and being able to have spaces where people can talk about those things. You know, the things that we don't want to happen are if something is happening to someone and they just feel like they can't share it and they don't know who to talk to, or they don't feel like they can talk to anyone, and making sure that we're creating spaces in the community for that. So for example, if someone's going to a hospital or a clinic, and then they could seek help from that. So I think there's definitely so many ways that we can be talking about it and not limit trafficking to one specific scenario. Because while, you know, while people can be kidnapped, that and that has happened, it really is not the majority of how trafficking happens. And so really making sure that we're being mindful about that and educating people, I think it's so crucial to more and more awareness and more help being able to be distributed to people who need it.
Right. So the last question I had for you was, what are solutions or actions that you could take if you think someone is in danger? I know that you touched on the human trafficking hotline number and texting, but is there any other resources that you think people should be aware of?
Yeah. If you see someone in, you know, suspect trafficking, and if you think someone is in imminent like physical danger, I think it really just depends on the scenario. We do not recommend stepping into a situation yourself to not confront the victim or the trafficker and or trafficker, simply because you could be putting everyone at risk, including yourself, of safety. So we really want to make sure that directly not intervening is not something that we recommend, especially if you're not sure and you kind of suspect something's happening versus being completely sure. So that's why we recommend the hotline. The National Human Trafficking Hotline is 24/7. It's in multiple languages, so people can really think about that. When you're, if you choose to report, there can be some helpful steps, really making sure that you kind of remember some of these details of the situation. Maybe you can take mental notes or write something down, date, time, what was happening, summary of the situation. Mm-hmm. If you see someone potentially in imminent danger, you can contact emergency services should you choose to. So I think it's just really dependent on what is happening, but being able to report that to someone if you're on public transit, or if you're around public transit, or if you're near a hospital, or you're, there's a lot of different avenues that people could be trained to really identify. So really bringing that forward to a manager or a security personnel potentially in what areas you are in to really talk about. So I would say like those are some of the things that I would say are helpful to think about if you do potentially see a situation. I recommend, they're also, depending on the scenario, people can do their own trainings on bystander training. And that doesn't mean necessarily get involved. It could mean like a distraction. So, you know, I would think there's a lot of different ways that people can really look at that as well.
I didn't even think about bystander training. That's so cool. Is that something that you guys offer?
We do not do bystander intervention, but bystander intervention, there's so many avenues that it can be used for. Like if someone's harassing someone, if there's a lot of racism going on and there's kind of like someone who's yelling and harassing someone, they're like, so there's a lot of different avenues that people can take. But, you know, this is, we don't recommend like a go in to feel like you can save someone's scenario. We really think about making sure that we're not confronting people in that way, especially if you think it's a trafficking situation or suspect something like that. But I think people often feel concerned about what that can look like. And so I think bystander intervention as a whole is very helpful, and people can find free trainings of that online.
Awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with us today and re-recording this episode with me. I'm extremely grateful. And I also want to thank our guests for listening and want to remind them to share their voice because their voice matters.